Welcome to the Hoops and Huddle podcast. I am Malika Walker, joined by Justin. Introduce yourself, Justin.
What's up, Malika? Justin Payton here, aka It's Just JP from TikTok and YouTube. I'm so glad to be on Hoops and Huddle again, and I'm excited to talk about the subject of today. So thank you, Malika, for having me on.
Today we're going to talk about the best of enemies, the 30 for 30. That honestly is one of my favorite basketball 30 for 30s ESPN has ever produced. It's still a masterpiece to this day, each episode. So today we're not going to be talking about everything that happens in an episode. We're just going to have a discussion on some of the high points and some of the things covered in history. Of course, in the Best of Enemies, we have Ice Cube narrating the Lakers section. Then we had Donnie Wahlberg narrating the Celtics, which I thought was hilarious and perfect for the time to have both of those people who are so intertwined with those franchises
I love it.
do the whole narration. But the first thing that sticks out, we could talk about Red Auerbach, and just honestly, even though he's one of the most important Celtics ever, period. So I want you to give you could talk about Red Auerbach and just his importance and him bringing in Bill Russell. And, I wanted you to give your spiel on how you feel about Red Auerbach.
If you talk about the most important Celtic of all time, people bring up Bill Russell or Larry Bird, but Red Auerbach has to be the most important Celtic of all time just because of what he did for the culture for African Americans, drafting black players, starting black players on his team, got Bill Russell as the first black head coach in the in modern sports. Nobody having done that. So Red Auerbach was just very important. Just his IQ invented the fast break for the Boston Celtics, be able to run up and down the court. Just a brilliant mind, and then transition over to president GM of the Boston Celtics and pull off incredible moves. And all he wanted to do was win and take advantage of anything that he does, especially with the Lakers. So Red Auerbach is a very important figure and very well respected to this day.
Yeah, like when I read Auerbach, like he put, he fielded, he had the first black starting five on the court, was Red Auerbach. He wanted to win. He didn't care about what I love about Auerbach when I read the history. He wanted to win and by any means necessary. So, like him bringing in Bill Russell because he knew the impact he will have on basically on defense and really leading a team, being a strong leader for a team. He also, I love that about him. And I absolutely, with Bill Russell being the first coach, really black coach, really, but he was the first player coach. And I just love, like, he just wanted to win, and that's how he made his decisions. And remember, this is the, like, we're talking about the 60s, right? So we got to think about the time period, because I think this is important to keep in mind as we look in the future. And when we get to Larry Bird in just a second, it is interesting how the story around Auerbach changed because of Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, and him drafting those players and Danny Ainge and just the image of the Celtics. But people really don't think about the history. And when we look at the Lakers, this was the period of Jerry West and Elgin Baylor. They were there before Wilt even made it there. He made it there later. I think about those Celtics and Jerry West because I also, in probably next week, I'm going to do a review of his book, because his book was powerful to me when you think about it. Just the heavy, when you're watching the show, you think about all of those losses versus the Celtics and how that affected him. He talked about him not being able to go into the Boston Garden. What did you think about Jerry West in general and just the Lakers of him and Elgin Baylor, during the 60s, going up against the Celtics all those times and coming up short?
Yeah, Jerry West, it just shows you just how competitive Jerry West was. We talk about the competitiveness of Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, just the killer instincts. They really want to win at all costs. And that was Jerry West back in the 60s with the Lakers. He wanted to win at all costs, and he would be so close of beating the Celtics, whether it would be a missed shot or just they just can't get it done. And you can just see that it just stings. It still stings to him to this day whenever you interview him and you bring up the Celtics and stuff. You know, he's just like, like you could just see his face just kind of change red because like he really wanted to beat the Celtics and he just couldn't really get the job done, unfortunately, him and Elgin Baylor, unfortunately. So, but they were a great team to watch and be able to fill out the arena and stuff, you know, and getting Chuck Hunn as a broadcaster and then bringing people to the arena when they first came into town, everybody was just like looking at the Dodgers. The Dodgers was selling out was selling out in Los Angeles, and they were just like Lakers. Like, what's a Laker? All we know is George Mikan and the Minneapolis Lakers. And then when he retired, everybody stopped coming. So, but yeah, Jerry West, just a true competitor that he is, one of the greatest of all time.
I just wanted to make sure I know we're going to do special episodes, or Hoops and Huddle is going to do special episodes on Bill Russell that looks also at his social justice background, and we're going to talk about him in more detail. Maybe a little series on Bill Russell, a little series on Jerry West, those two players in particular. So we're not going to go in depth on some of the things that Bill Russell dealt with during his time in Boston. What we will say for now is Bill Russell's last season was 1969. And as a player, and Wilt Chamberlain came to the Lakers in 1969. Now, we were remiss if we didn't talk about Game Seven, and we don't talk about the game where Chamberlain hurt his had a knee injury, and he came out the game, and the coach was so disappointed. You know, with that, even though Bill Russell, I mean, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, after a while, he was okay to go back in. His coach was so livid with him, he did not put him back in a game that ended up losing again. And the impression I got watching this was, think about this time if a player had a knee injury and they wouldn't be put back in a game. They wouldn't be put back. They wouldn't be put. The player wouldn't ask to go. You know, maybe they wouldn't. They would say that he's out for the rest of the game for the most part. With in some cases, sometimes they go back in. But I get the impression this was a serious injury, and he was like, "You know what? Let me go back in." And coach was so pissed. He's like, "No, you basically you," and I crack up every time I think about it, because wow, in 1969 versus now, player had a serious knee injury. Teams wouldn't risk putting him in for the most part. So when you think about that, what does that make you think about the times and just the effect of it? And them losing again, because the Lakers wouldn't win a championship until after they weren't playing the Clippers. I mean, the Boston when they finally won their championship. So, and Jerry West was like, it didn't feel the same because they didn't beat the Celtics. So when you think about those events, what does that make you think? How close they were, and then when they did win, it wasn't against the Celtics, so it didn't have the same meaning.
That was actually a hilarious part, you know, while watching it, was just seeing the coach refusing to let Wilt Chamberlain. But it just tells you at the time that no matter what injuries you have, it's game seven of the finals, it's the playoffs. You need to play. I don't even care if you have a broken foot. I don't even care if you have a broken wrist. You're gonna go out there and play and stuff, you know. Then what you see today with a Kawhi Leonard, for example, that can just set out games, you know, with a knee injury and stuff, unfortunately. But it just tells you with the times. But yeah, I mean, like hey, you know, Jerry West wanted to get the Boston Celtics in 72. You know, they felt like that was the best team, you know, 33 straight games. And then when they, you know, Celtics couldn't win and they had the New York Knicks, Jerry West was right. He was like, it just didn't feel right because, you know, all he wanted to do was to beat the Boston Celtics. He didn't have to care about any other team that he had to go through. All he wanted was Boston, because losing to them seven times, it just, you, like I say, you, if you just look at Jerry West's face, it still bothers him to this day
that this he, day.
Cannot, to, this he day. Cannot beat the Boston Celtics. So but yeah, it was a great part. It was hilarious. But yeah, at the same time, you know, like, you know, Jerry got his championship, he's happy about it, but he really wanted just to beat the Celtics, and just imagine them beating the Celtics. He would have had the biggest relief and the biggest monkey off the chip too. So,
and that's what, you know, like, and that really ended that era of the Celtics and really the Lakers when you think about it. Because after the Lakers won, finally won a championship, you know, we get into the 70s, which was that period where there's rumored to be like a high level of drug use in the 70s. But if you read Teresa Runstetler's book, Black Ball, it just gives a different impression of that period. Like, this was the period, remember the 70s. And we're gonna do a special pod on the 70s because we gotta talk about Oscar Robertson and his groundbreaking agreement for the NBAPA for free agency. Like, we're gonna talk about that as well. But 70s were an interesting period. But in 1975, the Lakers traded for Kareem. And, you know, so it was, you know, they had a star that got Kareem, but it was not until 1979 when the Lakers got Magic and the Celtics, who drafted Bird the year before, but, you know, they had that rule. That was the last year of this rule, where you can get drafted and, you know, still play or go to college for another year. Larry Bird took advantage of that, and he ended up going to Boston in 79. So they both started the same year. And they would change the NBA. Basically, they're credited with saving the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had phenomenal rookie seasons.
Oh, yeah.
They came into the league and put it on fire. You know, you know, like, the Celtics had, like a 22 and something. Like, they had a really bad record the year before Larry Bird started. And the Lakers really weren't the greatest team either, you know, like, at that time. And you bring in these rookies and an amazing turnaround. So when you think about that 79 to 80 season, what do you... You know, what comes to mind as a self? You weren't, of course, neither of us were around at that we were around, but we, you know, I was around just very young. What do you think about when you read or watch, when you're watching 30 for 30 about this period?
Yeah. So going as a Celtics perspective, getting Larry Bird finally coming to Boston, a lot of expectations.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, this is the great white hope. This is the guy that's going to save basketball, of, you know, especially with the Celtics. And then for him to come in and change the franchise around, like, the biggest game turnaround in NBA history, went from 29 games the year before to 61. Mm-hmm. Just tells you just how incredible Larry Bird was, and the respect that he got from his black teammates like Cedric Maxwell. He was just like, I don't really think he could play. And then when he found out, he was like, oh man, this brother can play. And just being able to just change that Boston, and just knowing that, like, he's going to be the future for the Boston Celtics. And one rookie of the year too, as well, in like a runaway fashion. Magic only got, like, you know, a couple of votes, and they were in the LA. And then when Magic came in, you know, from a Laker perspective and stuff, he brought fun, enthusiasm, and excitement back to the
Yes, he
league.
did. Yes, he did.
Because Kareem was the leader. He was the best player in the NBA, but he was very stoic. He don't really like the media and stuff like that. Like, he was like coming off as an angry black man that can really play basketball.
Yeah.
And he's talking about black is beautiful, black justice. But then when Magic came in, you know, people be calling him an Uncle Tom just because of the way he, his charisma just affected a lot of people, especially he's opening up to the white people in the media, being able to do interviews and stuff. And for him to win the championship his first year, and playing the center position because Queen was out.
Yeah, that's crazy when you think about it.
Exactly. And Kareem was MVP that season. And the writers already wrote Kareem as the finals MVP to beat the 76ers. And then when he went down with the injury, Magic's performance in the 80 finals in game six, that performance is one of the greatest of all time. 42 points, I think 15 rebounds, 7 assists. Like, it was one of the greatest performances of all time. And everybody that had Kareem as winning the finals MVP, they took his name out and put Magic Johnson's name in after an incredible performance.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It showed that, like, Magic is a winner. And both of these perspectives, it shows Larry and Magic was all about winning. They would do whatever it takes to help their team win. And it really kind of, like, you know, pay people attention of, like, this is going to be good basketball for years to come, because you got Magic Johnson over there in L.A. with his charisma, and then you got the blue collar Larry Bird in Boston, and both coming in with that same mindset of trying to win and try to represent their franchises the best way. I mean, it was going to be a phenomenal league for years to come.
Amazing. And when you think about it, just their immediate impact on both franchises. They came in and just took over those franchises, really, from a personality perspective. Because, like, Magic, and people don't really think about, like, the teams that were built around, that were around both these players. When you look at the Celtics, you know, like, you know, they would draft Kevin McHale, I believe in 87. Or no, not 87. That was late. But they drafted Kevin McHale. And man, like, Cedric Maxwell talked about how he had to learn to accept that, you know, there are some white players that can really, really play.
Yeah.
This challenged Larry Bird when he came into the camp. You know, like, he challenged him, and he had to give him his props. And that was, you know, like, back in that time, that was really a lot for him. So when I think about both of these players, and what I love about Larry, he just wanted to play.
Yes.
Like, he just wanted to play. It was a lot of the way that the media was working back then. It was very, you know, black versus white kind of thing going around at this time. And he just wanted to, both of Magic and Larry just wanted to play.
Yeah.
And you got the handle, you got the feeling that Larry just was not comfortable having those touchy, like, very serious type of conversations when it came to race. He just wanted to focus on the game, which made me just really respect him more. You know, Rob Parrish, a player, when he came in, he was out of shape when he arrived in camp. And is this Red Auerbach pulling off that trade for Parrish and drafting Kevin McHale, what changed the Celtics during the 80s? You know, like, just changed them. So, you know, you have McHale coming in 1980, and you end him with Robert Parrish, and then Dennis Johnson, he eventually would get there. And it, just an amazing, when you think about it, starting five before they even got Bill Walton for that short period. So with the Celtics, you know, you look at the team that was around him, and then around Magic, they would draft James Worthy. They had Kareem. You had You had Wilkes, you had Michael Cooper, and for a period you had Norm Nixon. You know, some solid, not just one of the greatest players of all time in Kareem, but you had a solid team around them. So when we think about super teams, it's like, okay, some people see it as super teams if they're drafted or not drafted, still a super team. And they're both considered super teams because when you think about it, Kareem's in the Hall of Fame, Magic's in the Hall of Fame. Now you have Michael Cooper in the Hall of Fame. When you think about the Celtics, Kevin McHale, Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, Dennis Johnson, they're all in the Hall of Fame. And Bill Walton, they're all in the Hall of Fame. So these were both great teams that basically went back and forth competing in the 80s. But I think one thing that we sometimes forget is Celtics had a rivalry with Philly and in the East. So before they even got to the finals, they had to usually get through Philly. So I was wondering if you can reflect on that battle between, Larry Bird and Julius Erving, Dr. J.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest playoff series of all time because most of these games in that series was they won by like a
Are we
couple.
talking about 81? Are we talking about 81?
81, yes, 81 before they went to the finals against the Houston Rockets. Those games, that series against the Sixers from the Celtics, they won probably like by a couple of points, except for maybe one game where they won by double digits and stuff. But Philly was up like 3-1, and people thought it was going to be over. But the Celtics never gave up, and they went and won like 3 straight games. And Larry Bird was unbelievable during that stretch of games, and Philly just couldn't really have they didn't really have an answer for Larry Bird, and Larry and that team, they wanted to get to that final so bad, and they was able to defeat Philly. But after that series, though, Philly and Boston was just a rivalry in the East, you know.
In the East, they were, the fights and like they were throwing punches and everything. But I love the, and I'm going to do an analysis. I'm going to do like a review when you're looking at that team, Julius Erving, Moses Malone. When you look at that team, and just how stacked they were and how people felt they will win a little more than they did, but the Celtics came around, they came along, and that they were that competition that they had to face to get out of the East. So you have the Lakers winning in 80, you have the Celtics winning in 81, and you had them pretty much in the finals, either Lakers or the Celtics in every year. But one of the players that drove me crazy when I watched the series that I look at with such disdain, but a player that if he was on your team, you would love him on your team.
I know you're talking about.
But if he's not on your team, if some of the things he said, I wanted to punch the screen. And that was ML Carr. Oh my God. I will watch this. Every time I watch it, I'll be like, I can't stand ML Carr. But this last time I looked at it, I was like, you know what? If he was on my team, he pushed his team. He pushed his team to compete. And he played that bad guy. Let them hate me. You go out there and you compete. You know what I mean? Because we know that Bird would tell people what he was going to do before he did it in the playoffs. They talked about that in there, which I thought was hilarious. And Bird had people shook when he, if the ball was in his hands in the final seconds because of he was an assassin with that ball. Sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't in the playoffs, right? So, but with ML Carr, and one time he even decided a game. He even hit key shots in the game. It's like, dude, he actually had an impact. He wasn't just a flag. He wasn't just a towel waver. Because what Byron Scott talked about, oh, ML Carr waving at waving that darn towel. Some of the things he would say to them, I was like, oh my God, Amel Carr as a character. But I was like, you know what? I respect him because he was doing what needed to do for his team to make sure his team stayed positive and stayed focused on the task at hand. The task at hand was beating the Celtics, period. Beating the Lakers, period. What and he made sure he worked on getting in the Lakers' heads and keeping his team, him and Danny Ainge, because Danny Ainge is one of the hated people in the league. And when they had that conversation, then when the you know when that series where they eventually had the conversation about Danny Ainge was the one that was seen as the one giving dirty fouls. And he thought, okay, so can somebody else do it this time? Can somebody else give that foul this time? And it, he was, yeah, he was just, he was done with it. He wanted somebody else to stand up and give that foul. And when we get to the Kurt Rambis game, and every time I think about Kurt Rambis and that clothesline, Lord, it's just hilarious to me. And not hilarious to Kurt Rambis. Not hilarious to Kurt Rambis. He was absolutely livid. But it was a clothesline. And there, you know, it was a clothesline. And it's crazy when you think like if that happened in today's league, he'll be probably banned or something,
Be arrested.
or like that was assault. And when you look at the when you look at the clothesline now and what, because they were basically getting beat, and they was like, we need to do something. And then, you know, anytime, you know, this is the time we got to remember, you come in the lane, you're getting put down hard. So Kurt Rambis was expecting a hard foul going in the lane. He was expecting if you drive to the basket, you were getting put on your, and he knew he was getting a hard foul because enough of this, because that was just the culture back then, but he wasn't expecting to be clotheslined. So when you think back on that series, what makes you think of, that was the linchpin that changed the vibe of the entire series? So that changed it. So when you think about that clothesline, what comes to mind?
That really did change the series because it just changed the Lakers' mental approach, because they were known as like the pretty boy team because they were the Showtime Lego Lakers. They were glitz and glamour, and they was not ready mentally against the Celtics, and the Celtics was just more physical. They was just bullying them and stuff. You seen Kareem get into it with Larry Bird. We seen Magic getting into it with Kevin McHale. We seen James Worthy getting into it with Cedric Maxwell. And you playing in the hands of the Celtics, because the Celtics were like the gritty team in the East, the blue collar fans. And then you're playing into Cedric and ML Carr's hands because they're known as trash talkers and will get in your heads. So it really changed the series, and the Lakers were not ready to be
That
physical.
level of they weren't ready for
They
that
wasn't ready.
level of physicality at all. And this we're talking about the 1984 series, and this is, you know, we know the Celtics won that series, especially so winning time, because that's how winning time ended the show. But which people who may not know the history do not know is that the Lakers beat the Celtics more times in that decade than indicated with them winning the 84 championship. Because the Lakers will win in 85, Celtics will win in 86, that amazing 86 team. And that has to be a separate one that we that has to be a separate one
It
talking
has to
about
be.
1986. Because we can talk all day about the amazing men of the 1986 season. I, you know, when you think about this period, they won 84, the Celtics, they won 86. And, you know, you have Magic being called Tragic Johnson after the 84 series. And this was, they really hated each other on the court. Like, it wasn't a personal thing. They respected each other off the court. You know, they weren't friends, but they respected each other's game, but they generally disliked, they hated each other's. To this day, Magic was like, there's nothing that gives him more pleasure than beating the Celtics. And what I loved about the Best of Enemies is the rivals. This is the greatest rivalry of all time. The Celtics and the, we don't have these rivalries anymore. But this rivalry, you really, not like this, like you really feel that animosity. And I felt like when the Lakers finally beat the Celtics, you know, it really, man, you could see the ghosts of the players in the past and the ones, meaning like their younger selves, celebrating like a young Jerry West, you know, popped up in my head when they won, and Elgin Baylor, and just all those players like Wilt Chamberlain, you know, smiling. Remember Star Wars at the end when they re-released it, and at the end when they show Anakin and like a young Anakin, you know, like and the preview, you know, all of those previous masters. That's the way I felt when I was watching the Lakers finally beat the Celtics. It was like, because that happened in 85, right? So I, you know, like they beat him in 85, they beat him in 87. You know, they beat him, it was more times than which when you think about it was either the Lakers or the Celtics in the finals every year of the 80s. Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy, but it's also not crazy because you got two of the best unselfish players of all time with both of them have the one of the highest winning percentages of all time in NBA history. They came in with a goal, which is to win at all cost, and they really did it every single year. It's either the Lakers or the Celtics in the finals. It just shows the will to win. It just shows the dedication. It shows that like they want to win at all costs. And that rivalry, especially in the 80s, especially in 84, it gave new life, a new boost to the NBA and welcome modern NBA and welcome like, you know, people in, and everybody accepted one another. And then you got a lot of great players that came through after 84 that, you know, gave the NBA and took it to the next level, like a Michael Jordan, Clyde Drexler, David Robinson, Shaquille O'Neal, just to name a few, just gave new life because of Magic and Bud's impact, because they saved the NBA from what it was and just gave new life to the NBA and to the sport of basketball.
Yeah, when you think about it, you have the Lakers who actually won five championships in the 1980s. And it's, you know, like it's when they think about that time, like, you know, like James Worthy was like, look, I wasn't on those teams in the 60s. In my era, we beat the Celtics. And so the Celtics had three championships in the 80s, right? So, you know, 5-3, you know what I mean? So James Worthy was like, look, in my era, we dominated the Celtics. I mean, we won more chips than them. And so that's what they, and they won for the guys from the 60s. And
They
so
did.
for them, they see themselves as the winners. And so that's the one thing I love about the Best of Enemies. They do cover that the Celtics and the Lakers did face each other later, but that was completely different era, that it wasn't the same mystique. This, the true Best of Enemies was the 80s, that 80s period, when you saw the two of the greatest franchises in NBA history fight each year to the death in the finals, whether they were playing each other or another team. Truly special era. One of my favorite sports documentaries of all time.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't seen the Best of Enemies, 30 for 30 Best of Enemies, about the Lakers versus the Celtics, you know, we highly recommend it. It is a great doc. You can find it on ESPN Plus. And then you may find them on other streaming services, because they've been, you know, ESPN has been sharing their library with Netflix and with Hulu. So if you do get a chance, definitely check it out. It goes through more than what we discuss, but it is one of the greatest documentaries ever. So anything you want to say about the doc, and we can close out.
It's just a well done documentary. Just watching it, it just felt like a movie that I can just watch over and over again. And like, for the young generation of fans, they can go and watch it and just understand how the NBA came to be what it is today. And for all the old school fans that lived through an era, they go back and refresh their memories. Like, oh, I remember 84. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in that seat and watching it live. So it's just a great documentary. It's really much well done. Shout out to Donnie Wahlberg covering the Celtics on the Boston perspective side. Shout out to Ice Cube. They both did great with the narrating, and then having the talking heads in the documentary and just listening to them from their perspective. It was just awesome. And I recommend anybody to watch it.
And just for the record, I don't care what people say now, Magic Johnson is the greatest point guard of all time.
You ain't gonna have no argument for me. So
Magic Johnson is the greatest point guard of all time. And Larry Bird is one of the best forwards of all time. They have been many great forwards, but Larry is up there. And we're gonna close out to that. You know, I dare you to present an argument of a better point guard than, and I mean traditional point guard. I'll be looking at comments to see if you guys have any arguments for great point guards, better than Magic. But thanks for paying attention to Hoops and Huddle, and we'll be back with more historical content. One love.